Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you here today. Always happy to be with you all when I can, as I can. And the Silk or Joe Show is a Main Street Radio Network production, so I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. Surely, without them, this program would not have been around for the last, almost 10 years now. We are actually in our 10th year, going on to our 11th year, and I've mentioned before how that's just a sleight of hand verbally with the numbers there, make it sound like we've been around longer than we actually have been, that we're going to be going into our 11th year in 2 months. That just means that we're not even 10 years old yet. Anyway, though, I got a lot to cover on this show today because, you know, I only get like an hour with you all per week, and that means there's a lot of stuff that boils up that probably should be addressed and a lot of stuff that I miss. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I want to get to. And actually, if all the monologues that I have written out over news stories and the like, if I manage to read them all back to back to back, well, it would take the full hour and probably extra hour the following weekend. But we do want to give you guests as well. However, if you want to check us out on the internet, you know, you like the show, you're not going to hear any of these unused monologues on the internet, that's for sure. They are going to hide on my computer until they can be referenced later. But we have our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com. That's the main website. Actually, that's the only website for this show. The Alan Nathan Show, on the other hand, another show that we do that I guest host sometimes, they have a website, alannathan.com, but there is no silkerjoeshow.com. Or if there is, it's not us. Don't go there. Anyway, but we do have social media pages, Facebook under Main Street Radio Network, on Twitter at Main Street Radio, and also at Alan Nathan, although that's just for the Alan Nathan Show. And then also on Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, where, you know, it's just kind of this generic post that says there's a show coming up, and that comes out every Saturday or so. And then there's also on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, where that's a more detailed post about what the show is going to consist of, as well as whenever I guest host for Alan, although that also pops up on Wimkin and on our Main Street Radio Network Facebook pages as well, and I think on Alan Nathan's Twitter. So lots of places that you can see where I guest host for him, but only one place where you can see what each Silk or Joe Show every week is going to contain. Anyway, now we're at the contents of this program. If you all heard the Merrick Garland hearing earlier this week, he was addressed by Congresswoman Victoria Spartz, a Republican out of Indiana, and she's talking about how there's this atmosphere of fear that's being created by the Department of Justice, and she asked Merrick Garland if he's aware that it exists at all, and he's like, oh no, of course not, and you shouldn't be attacking the Department of Justice like that. So then she says, okay, well, here's the examples of the fear that you're creating. And she talked about how on January 6th, some people just showed up for a protest, you know, showed up with their families and stuff and then got caught in the riot. But then the FBI comes and plasters their phone number across her district, demanding that anyone who has seen anyone at the Capitol report them to the FBI, regardless of if the person was there just, you know, to protest and not there to actually riot. So she says that's really creating an atmosphere of distrust there, that the FBI is going to prosecute you no matter what you're on the Capitol for. And other parts of the hearing talked about the unequal justice between Capitol Hill protesters and other such protesters. But this also segues into something that Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez said. She's telling a crowd that they want to end fossil fuels worldwide. And she says, quote, they need to be, quote, too big and too radical to ignore. Now, by the standards of Merrick Garland, who is plastering the FBI's phone number across districts if you were just standing at the Capitol, that kind of makes her an insurrectionist, doesn't it? If just being at the Capitol on January 6th makes you an insurrectionist, then surely saying that your movement to overturn the world order and end all fossil fuels, something that the U.S. military and the Capitol building rely on, mind you, saying that you need to be too big and too radical to ignore, I would say that's incitement. Because this is the same Department of Justice under Merrick Garland that says that Trump is conspired to throw a riot by saying peacefully protest and let your voices be heard. Okay, if that's enough to be considered incitement for a riot, then surely make your voices too big, or actually she didn't say make your voices, she just said you need to be too big and too radical to ignore. Okay, she didn't say, unlike Trump who said peacefully protest, and calmly let yourselves be heard and all that. You know, Trump never said go punch people at the Capitol. He didn't say that. He just said peacefully. He made sure that that was clear. And actually, as he was making that statement, the riot was already breaking out on the Capitol. So, meanwhile, you have, again, AOC. She didn't specify do it peacefully. She didn't specify your voices. She just said be too big and too radical to ignore. And these are the same climate protesters that she's addressing who are out there gluing themselves to roads, vandalizing art, and also storming Capitol Hill offices, which they've been doing for years, with impunity. They bypass, they breach security, they occupy offices, disrupt the legislative process. Everything that the January Sixers are being imprisoned for life for doing. I mean, gee whiz, there's two 70-year-olds who were just walking through the Capitol. Each of them gets 10 years in prison for just walking through the Capitol on January 6th, not actually being part of the destruction that was going on. Yet, here's Ocasio-Cortez saying, yeah, well, guess what? If you're a climate protester, you can breach the Capitol and no one will care. You can do exactly what these 70-year-olds who are going to spend 10 years in prison did, and no one will care, because you're a Democrat, so go for it. And what a message to send, where Democrats can do whatever they want. Republicans, on the other hand, face decades in prison for doing what Democrats do. In fact, the message couldn't be more loud and clear when you have the Democrat guy with the truck, the 40-year-old Democrat with the truck who ran over an 18-year-old Republican. And he set out to murder the Republican. He said, hey, I'm going to kill someone. I'm going to kill me, a Republican. He ran the guy down. It was deliberate, targeted murder. He gets 5 years in prison. Only five. 70-year-olds get 10 years for peacefully walking through the Capitol, whereas a murderer who targeted somebody and murdered them gets only 5 years. I get. So that tells you what your life is worth if you don't vote for the Democrats, right? They only get 5 years in prison, whereas if you dare walk through sacred ground of the ruling class, you get 10 years. And Merrick Garland wonders why people attack the Department of Justice and why they say there's an atmosphere of fear. But of course, Garland is part of the problem. He is probably one of the most crooked attorney generals we've ever had. He's certainly the most partisan one we ever had. And it's kind of funny because he's the guy that the Democrats said wasn't a radical. Remember that in 2016? How when Justice Scalia passed, the Democrats, they wanted to appoint Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court vacancy. And then the Republicans, Mitch McConnell, he said, we're going to resist this. We're just going to hold it out until the next president. And Democrats said, well, Merrick Garland's a moderate. We're going to win this 2016 election, and then we're going to appoint a real leftist. Well, Merrick Garland certainly seems to have proven just how radical he is, and that we really dodged a bullet because he is no moderate of any kind. What kind of moderate sicks the FBI on parents and calls them domestic terrorists? What kind of moderate actually sets that sort of thing up? Because that's what Merrick Garland did. He had the Department of Justice, I guess because his son-in-law makes a lot of money off critical race theory, so he has the Department of Justice reach out to a teacher group and say, hey, could you say parents are terrorists, or that you're afraid for your lives of parents so that we can label them as terrorists? And so the parent group complies, and then the FBI, using the justification that it created for itself, says, oh, look, they're terrorists now, and it's not us, we're independent. It's this teacher group that says they're terrorists, even though, again, the FBI is the one who told the teacher group what to say. It's like they have a little puppet sitting in their lap and having a conversation with it. That's all that was. So, using the justification of their puppet, the FBI labels parents as domestic terrorists if they dare to protest critical race theory, which, again, just so happens to be what Merrick Garland's son-in-law makes millions of dollars off of. How can you get more corrupt than that? And then it's not like the FBI just had a little classification, a little ledger in their offices, and that's where the end of this was. No, they showed up at school board meetings. The FBI did. Helicopters, unmarked cars, agents. They really got aggressive against parents who dared threaten Merrick Garland's bottom line. So, very corrupt, very crooked, and that's just par for the course for the modern FBI and the modern Department of Justice. And you gotta wonder, where are all these good agents at? Because I know how hard it is to fire anyone in the executive branch, okay? It's very difficult. So if there are good agents, if there are good bureau chiefs, if there are good appointed officials, well, not appointed officials, they can easily be unappointed by the president. But if there's good people in the bureaucracy somewhere, where are they? They can easily thwart any of these measures and not face any criminal prosecution or not face any a chance of being fired. Gee whiz, the IRS, you know, they can do a lot to you without being fired. And in fact, the IRS, they rehired a bunch of agents after firing them. They only fired them for show. So that's what the government really thinks of hiring and firing practices. And as Alan Nathan on the Alan Nathan Show has mentioned, there's this rule where basically your government job is your private property just about. And anyone who's watched congressional hearings with like the head of the DEA and the head of other agencies, you know that they don't have the power to do any hiring and firing. It's actually a whole council of people. So, and it's very hard to terminate people. So where are the good FBI agents? They can't be in fear for their job. So does that mean there aren't any? Anyway, folks, more Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Recent news reports are raising the alarm about illegal, disposable vapes in kid-enticing flavors that are pouring in from China. Here's Fentanyl Fathers co-founder Greg Swan.
I lost my firstborn son, Drew, to an overdose, a tragedy no parent should experience. The FDA has started taking action against illegal, disposable vapes that could contain deadly fentanyl. Now, they need to get every one of these out of our communities.
Sponsored by Fentanyl Fathers.
Come get back to school ready with me and the brands I've partnered with. ThredUp is a one-stop shop where you can clean out your closet and buy affordable, sustainable secondhand clothing. Go to ThredUp.com/cleanout, order their signature polka dot bag or print a shipping label, and send ThredUp your gently worn items. They'll do all the work to resell your items. Target has all the national brands that you are looking for, and with deals starting at just $1, Target has all the back-to-school and back-to-college essentials you'll need. From T-Mobile, pick up a free 5G smartphone like the exclusive Rebel 6 Pro 5G or the award-winning Sync Up Kids Watch for free. Fairlife ultra-filtered milk is a great-tasting source of nutrition for families like mine. With 50% more protein and 50% less sugar than regular milk, Fairlife's 14-ounce bottles offer great-tasting, nutrition-rich products made to enjoy on the go. For more information on these brands, visit their websites.
Sponsored by Office Depot Office Max. It's back to school season, and teachers, parents, and students from kindergarten to college can find everything they need to succeed at Office Depot Office Max. With savings up to 60% on the company's best-selling school supplies through September 16th. And must-haves like Crayola products, spiral notebooks, composition books, and glue starting at just 50 cents, Office Depot Office Max is ready to kick the new school year into gear. Shoppers can get even more discounts and earn rewards towards future purchases with a free Office Depot Office Max Rewards membership. Need your school supplies fast? Customers can take advantage of the company's free 20-minute in-store pickup or opt for same-day delivery for qualifying orders. Office Depot and Office Max stores are supporting hundreds of Title I public schools across the country with an in-store donation program. Make a donation at checkout to help a local school in your community get new supplies to create a more productive learning environment. Visit officedepot.com/backtoschool.
Moms know it's the little things that matter most. A kiss for skinned knees, a hug for hurt feelings, and the small acts that keep families healthy. Many moms before me have seen serious diseases claim the health and lives of their families. Mine was affected by polio. Today, vaccinations for polio and many other diseases can help protect adults and children, generation after generation, mom after mom. Learn more about how to help keep your family healthy at vaccines.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. So, going off from the last segment there about the unequalness and the justice that we have in society, you know, it's a stark contrast the treatment that we're seeing Donald Trump and Hunter Biden getting, right? Because the DOJ, they're just kind of afraid that whatever they do to Hunter Biden will lead to Joe Biden. So, they don't really want to go after Joe Biden or Hunter Biden because, again, you know, could lead right to their president. And, you know, it's not like they have any special love for Joe Biden. It's just that, well, if they happen to pursue the matter and they get rid of Joe Biden, then they, as well, if they get a lot of egg on their face and people lose trust in them, and they don't really want that to happen because they're the government, they're the good guys, or they're the Democrat Party and they're the good guys. Anyway, joining us now to comment further on at least the House Republicans trying to go after Joe Biden, whether or not that will yield any results because they've circled the wagons, or that is the Democrats have, the House Republicans have not, well, maybe one of them or two of them have. We have former State Senator Ted Harvey. He is chairman of the Committee to Defeat the President at StopJoe.com. He also served as a White House staffer under President Ronald Reagan, district office manager for Congressman Joe Helley. Former State Senator Ted Harvey, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am great. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, happy to have you. So what do you make of the House GOP's impeachment attempt, or, well, inquiry, not really attempt yet, against Joe Biden?
Well, I think it's a good first step. I think that the speaker was brought kicking and screaming, and I get that. There's a lot of political risk involved when you try to impeach a president of the United States. When Bill Clinton left office after being impeached, he was the most popular president ever in the history of our country, and still is by polling standards. And you look at Trump, impeached twice, and he's leading the pack of Republicans in this nomination process by 50% or more, and he's leading Joe Biden. So there's a lot of risk of making a martyr out of the president by impeaching him. But if ever there was a cause to impeach somebody, this would be it, right? The Constitution says you can impeach somebody for treason, for bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. And if ever there was a case for bribery, this is it. We have the bank statements. We have all of the information necessary to show that there was money being brought in from our enemies, our communist enemies, and put into the Biden family bank account. And that's the definition of bribery. So it puts the speaker and the Republicans in a tough spot, even though it may be politically risky. They have a constitutional obligation to do it.
Right. And it's as they've said many times to the media, it's just an impeachment inquiry. They're not actually doing the votes for it yet. They're just doing it so they have more tools to find out if an impeachment is needed. And, you know, Kevin McCarthy, he was addressing a reporter with the Associated Press, and when she said, aren't you being a little extreme or something like that, you know, his reply was, well, here's what we've seen so far of Joe Biden, and he had her through every step of the process verify, yes, okay, yes, we've reported on this, yes, we've seen this, yes, yes. And he's like, okay, well, there you go. We're just doing an impeachment query to find out more.
Exactly. Yeah, the media is doing everything they can. I mean, they are obviously the propaganda machine for the Democrat Party, and they're going to beat up the Republicans and try to protect the president. And, you know, that dog's not going to hunt. The American people see what's going on. The Justice Department is going after Donald Trump and doing everything they can to bring down their political enemies while at the same time protecting Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, and the American people see that, and that's why Joe Biden's at some of the lowest polling rate numbers and of any president in our nation's history, and that's why Donald Trump's polling numbers have gone from mid-40s to 60s since all these indictments have come down. The American people aren't stupid. The American people are good people, and they are going to stand up against people that are abusing their power.
Yeah, and hopefully they keep their long memories going, because this narrative about what Joe Biden has been doing has been changing so much. First, it's he did nothing wrong. There's no evidence. There's nothing there. And then it went to, well, he never spoke to the business partners. He never met them. Then it went to, well, okay, he did speak to them, but he didn't talk business. And now the narrative is there's no direct evidence of corruption. You know, first there was no evidence. Now it's there's no direct evidence that he was involved in the corruption. So with this ever-changing narrative, it seems like eventually they're going to have to get to the point where they're just going to say, well, okay, yes, there was corruption, but it happened when he was vice president. He's clean as president, therefore you can't impeach him, because you're impeaching him for something he did when he was vice president. Should have impeached him then.
I think that's very prophetic. Write it down, because that's exactly what's going to happen. I've been thinking that for weeks now, because I believe the Republicans wouldn't be pushing as hard as they are currently if they don't have the goods. And I think they do have, and they've been dribbling it out slowly over the last 2 years. And I think between now and Election Day, they are going to bring out the goods and show for a fact that Joe Biden was a part of these conversations, and they have actual evidence to prove that. And it'll be interesting to see what the narrative is. And I think you hit it right on the head that they're going to say that was when he was vice president, not when he was president. And again, the American people aren't stupid. They will speak in November of 2024, and Joe Biden's going to go down one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. And that could be why we're seeing Democrats sort of distancing themselves from Joe Biden. I've just read a headline last night how when Joe Biden visited New York City, Mayor Eric Adams wanted nothing to do with him.
Well, that's a different issue. Adams realizes that his political life is on the line if he is seen with the guy who's responsible for destroying New York City. It's a humanitarian crisis there, and their parks are being overrun, their hospitals are being overrun, their schools are being overrun by illegal immigrants that this administration has been encouraging and flying all over the country. And it's destroying New York City, and the mayor realizes that if he's seen with Joe Biden, who is hated by even the Democrats in New York, that it's going to have a huge fallout on the mayor as well.
Yeah, I find that interesting, too, because you know, New York City, they're just, I guess, scapegoating Joe Biden for their own flaws, because they're the ones who said New York City is a sanctuary city. They're the ones who voted for candidates who believed in that. So it's kind of on them that they have to live up to the standards that they set.
Yep, all these virtue-signaling leftists for the last two decades who have been putting in place all of these ordinances, saying, proudly standing up and saying, we are a sanctuary city, we won't throw these criminals in jail and tell ICE about it. Suddenly they're reaping the whirlwind, and they're living what southern states and western states like Colorado, where I live, have been dealing with for decades. And now all of a sudden they're saying, well, we're not a border state, we shouldn't be doing this. Well, welcome to what it feels like, because their elitist, arrogant, virtue signaling behavior is what we've been dealing with in the West for years, and it's about time that they're finally feeling the ramifications of their open border policies.
Yeah, and I was just reading about how what was it, Eagle Pass, Texas? They had tens of thousands of illegal immigrants come in. New York City isn't even dealing with that many, but they're saying that they're taxed, they're out of money, and they got to move everyone out, and they're hating being a sanctuary city. But it's like the wealthiest city in the world, yet they don't have the money that to handle it, but they expect Eagle Pass, Texas to handle it. Former yep. State Senator Ted Harvey, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show. Sorry I kind of cut you off at the end there, but folks, more show after the break.
This Men's Health Month, we encourage men to take care of their largest organ, their skin. Plaque psoriasis is a common skin disease that may appear as raised and scaling red plaques anywhere on the body, like the knees and elbows, and even private and sensitive areas like the groin, genitals, between the buttocks, and armpits. Symptoms can include pain, cracking skin, and itching. While it occurs equally among men and women, several studies have shown that men tend to have more severe plaque psoriasis. Chad Cragen was diagnosed nearly 20 years ago with plaque psoriasis, affecting multiple areas of his body, including his elbows, knees, and between his buttocks. Chad is sharing his story to encourage other men to talk to their healthcare provider about their symptoms and learn about a steroid-free treatment option that may be able to help.
When I was first diagnosed, I walked out of my dermatologist's office with 5 different tubes and bottles of topical medicine to use on different parts of my body. Managing so many treatments, all with different instructions for different body parts, made my treatment routine confusing and time-consuming. Recently, I started using a steroid-free cream, Zoryve, roflumilast cream, that has simplified the management of my psoriasis, as I can use it anywhere on my body. I apply it once daily for my flare-ups, and it's really helped manage my symptoms by clearing my skin and reduce my pain and itch too. I also like the cream because it's not greasy or messy. It spreads easily, and I just need to apply a small amount to the area of my body where there are plaques. I think a lot of men with plaque psoriasis, especially if they have it in more private areas, may not bring it up with their healthcare provider. I encourage them to go talk to their provider and learn about the latest treatment options. And don't be afraid to have your healthcare provider examine your full body, because psoriasis may look and feel different depending on location. With the appropriate treatment regimen, things can change.
Zoryve is a prescription medicine used on the skin, topical, including in areas with skin folds to treat plaque psoriasis in people 12 years of age and older. It is not known if Zoryve is safe and effective in children under 12 years of age. Before taking Zoryve, tell your healthcare provider if you have liver problems and about the medicines you take. Do not use Zoryve in or on your eyes, mouth, or vagina. Tell your healthcare provider if you are pregnant, breastfeeding, or plan to be. It is not known if Zoryve will harm your unborn baby. The most common side effects of Zoryve are diarrhea, headache, trouble sleeping, nausea, application site pain, upper respiratory tract infections, and urinary tract infections. These are not all of the possible side effects of Zoryve. Talk to your healthcare provider to find out if Zoryve is right for you. For more information about plaque psoriasis and Zoryve, a steroid-free topical that works across affected body areas, talk to your healthcare provider or visit www.zoryve.com. That's Zoryve.com. Sponsored by Arcutis Biotherapeutics.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Yeah, I wanted to let Ted Harvey have a little bit of a thing at the end there, but then I had to get my point there. Of course I did, because I'm the host, and there was only 20 seconds left and the music was starting. And timing of segments just works out that way sometimes. Anyway, though, maybe this segment I won't cut anyone off, because I'm the only one here, and if I cut myself off, that would be very interesting, wouldn't it? So, last week, there was some stuff that I wanted to get to last week's show, some raunchy topics, mind you. Democrats got really mad at Senator John Kennedy, Republican, because he read a book called Genderqueer during a Senate hearing, and he just read excerpts from it. Now, this book, why did he read it? Well, he was addressing various folks involved with deciding what your kids learn about in school, various folks from the Biden administration and self-proclaimed experts, stuff like that. And so he's saying, hey, why are you all against parents that get mad about books being in schools when these are the books they get mad at? And then he goes and reads an excerpt from this book, which basically it's a pornographic book that teaches sex acts to little kids. And these books are in a lot of school libraries. You know, actually, I have here in my books, these quote, these books are in Democrat school libraries. I have that in my notes. But actually, it's in a lot of Republican districts as well. You'll find these books because the schools, they really, to pardon the euphemism, they really get off on bypassing Republican laws and putting this kind of stuff, smutty filth, in your schools for your kids to read. And, you know, it's not like it's a false equivalency like what that Colorado district did by banning the Bible under those anti-smut rules, because the Bible was different. The Bible criticized this sort of stuff and didn't actually graphically depict it, any of it. However, these books are like how-to manuals with pictures for your kids, for kindergartners. Why do Democrats want these in your schools? It's a very valid question. And apparently it made, and also, you know, you see people reading these books at school board meetings, and the school boards try to ban them for presenting such filthy content. But this is coming out of your kids, the library from your school. Why is this not allowed around adults, but why is it okay around kids? And, you know, one of the witnesses that Senator John Kennedy read of this stuff too said that it made him feel rather uncomfortable. So the adults don't like it, but they want it in the classrooms for the kids. Why would they want that? It's rather bizarre interest. And, you know, why do they think it's not suitable for adults, but it's suitable for ages 6 and up? I guess what, you have to be under 18 in order to appreciate smut? Is that what the Democrat Party line is these days? It's a very selective Puritanism, I guess, because that's what they would call it. That's what they call it whenever you resist this kind of thing. They just call you a Puritan. So it's very selective, though. Because they are now making a big stink about how there's a Democrat state legislator candidate in the state of Virginia who did some adult videos to help possibly help raise money for her campaign. And now the New York Times, though, they said that their headline was that Democrat candidate in Virginia sex tape was leaked, right? Now, the person's name, Susanna Gibson. She's running this year again for the Virginia House of Delegates. She apparently agrees with the headline. The headline almost came from the press office that the sex tape was leaked. But here's the problem. Well, first of all, just, you know, the other problem is that the New York Times is the source of this headline, so you know that might as well be her press office, right? Because they don't really do much reporting. They do a lot of stenography, though. The, you know, Democrats and candidates sends them a press statement, and they have some journalists say, hey, paraphrase this into your own words. That's pretty much how the New York Times seems to run these days. So the problem with this headline, though, that the sex tape was leaked, is that candidate for House state delegate, she was actually selling access to this tape in order to possibly raise money for the campaign, because she told people, hey, on this particular web service where you're allowed to do such things, she told people, hey, watch this video, and if you give me X amount of tokens, which are a form of currency, then I will do certain things that you want to see. So people gave her tokens. Now, apparently that's not allowed on this website either, so it violated the website's terms of service. It comes very close to prostitution, actually, because, you know, you're paying for sexual service there, but that's probably not directly on there. Anyway, though, point is that she was not trying to keep it secret, yet they're talking like it was some kind of hidden tape that was made in private just for her and her husband for whatever reason. But no, it wasn't. She was selling it for these tokens. And she said, by the way, that these tokens, which I guess on the website can be exchanged for real-life currency, real-life dollars, she said they were for a special cause, And then shortly after she raises a bunch of money this way, she starts campaigning. So it really looks like she was basically selling access to people to watch her to have sex in order to raise money for her political campaign. But then the New York Times, they decide, no, it's actually just a leaked sex tape that we saw. It wasn't, it was something in private. Totally ignoring what really happened, but that's not the first time the New York Times has done that. They've won Pulitzers in the past for, that's plural, for ignoring reality. So, you know, it's the same New York Times that says Joe Biden shouldn't be impeached because he let Hunter Biden make all the decisions. That's their defense, by the way, that Joe let Hunter make the choices for him, therefore Joe is innocent. So, really, should we be surprised that they'd just do whatever they can to carry this Democrat across the finish line in her race, even if it means bold-faced lying? Now, back to what the candidate did, you know, I admit to being fairly liberal about what candidates do in their personal life. I'm not like the New York Times in saying this stuff should be hidden. It should be bared for public exposure, even though these images are forever on the internet and their kids will see it one day, which Breitbart News got on their high horse about. Though, actually, I think that part is pretty hilarious, but my sense of humor is tasteless. I get the giggles at that Delta Airlines story from 2 weeks ago. But those poor kids will get a lot of crap as they grow up. Unlike typical liberals, they'll need to learn not to be such snowflakes because this is the kind of stuff their peers will eat up. But isn't selling access to a video feed of you having sex in order to raise money for your political campaign a violation of some kind of law? Okay, maybe it wasn't prostitution like I alluded to earlier, but isn't there some kind of campaign finance law that can be applied here? Because she severely implied, and, you know, circumstantial evidence that that's what it was for. So, doesn't she have to make a disclosure about this? Suddenly she gets this, or did she just, like, get this lump sum of money and then announce that she's running for can't office? Like, did that make it legal that even though she knew at the time she was going to do it and what the money was going to be used for, since technically she hadn't announced it yet, she could soak up all the cash she wanted without writing it down? Maybe that's a loophole that she exploited, which, you know, okay, that's fine, I guess. Maybe we should get rid of the loophole, I suppose, but yeah, if it's there, it's there. And as to the New York Times complaining that the tape was leaked, you know, if she was following campaign finance laws to the letter, then this activity would have been on the official record. So is New York Times saying that she should have broken the law? The New York Times is trying to make the GOP seem like the bad guys here, though the candidate is, and the candidate is also, by the way, trying to make the GOP seem like the bad guys. She's trying to say that Republicans are engaged in, quote, revenge porn by pointing to these private images. Trouble is that revenge porn is when you take images that just you and your ex made and post them online to humiliate your ex, images that were never intended for public consumption. Whereas Susanna Gibson, her entire business model for this was based on these images being public. So it can't be revenge porn to say, hey, look at this stuff she made available online herself. No more than it's revenge porn to share a link to a video on Pornhub that you like. So this woman did not want these images private. She sold access to them, possibly to raise money for her campaign, but then she and her stenographers at the New York Times are trying to say it should be off limits for some reason, and the GOP are just being evil or desperate by pointing out that she's making and selling porn and somehow violating her personal life. Except there's nothing personal about it. The New York Times gets mad over this, just as bad as if they get mad over the GOP putting together a montage of all the times Joe Biden publicly short-circuited. You know, that's just, it's like the same thing. It's all in the public record. Joe Biden, you know, shaking hands with invisible people, wandering across the stage, almost knocking a flag over in front of world leaders like he did the other day. You know, all that's public. So, just like what Susanna Gibson did, it was public. Nothing about this was private. So, now, granted, I can believe the folks at the New York Times are unfamiliar with the concept of pornography being public because, frankly, I don't think they'd know what to do with themselves in those situations because they're such losers, so maybe that's part of their issue. I guess that's what happens when you're in your 40s and still don't know what a man or woman are. Now, I should roll back a little on something I'm asserting, though, for legal reasons. It's not 100% confirmed that she was making the porn for campaign cash. It just so happens, again, that she told people buying this pornography that money would go to a special cause, and shortly thereafter she ran for Virginia's House as a delegate using money that she somehow obtained for a special cause. Unfortunately, due to quirks in the law, we're not allowed to call a spade without risking lawsuits, so I have to just say it's reasonable to conclude that she sold porn for herself for campaign cash, but perhaps she didn't. And to be fair, it's just practice for when she prostitutes her values to her biggest donors, special interest groups, and her party leaders. So, this will have no impact on Democrat voters, though, and the election is likely to be rigged anyway, so I really don't see the problem here. I mean, again, these are the same Democrat voters who think that your child should be reading books that the adults cringed over, as I mentioned in the opening of the segment. So why would they object to this? More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Rockstar Energy is jumpstarting the summer you want with the energy you need, giving away $50,000 to fuel your Memorial Day weekend. Millions of Americans are eager to kick off the holiday weekend with a travel getaway. In fact, experts predict 82% of summer travel will be by car. And with high gas prices, 89% will be looking for travel rewards, which is why Rockstar Energy wants to help you save at the pump and stay energized to get to your next destination. Here's how it works. Throughout Memorial Day weekend, the first 1,000 people to stop by any gas station, buy three Rockstar Energy products, and fuel up on gas or electric charge will get up to $50 cash back. Text ENERGY to 81234 to find out more. The rewards don't stop there. All summer long, you can earn up to $5 cash back when you buy two Rockstar Energy products and fill up at any gas station. To find out more, text ROCKSTAR to 81234. Let Rockstar fuel your drive this summer. I'm Kendra Wright.
In 2021, New York Times bestselling author Victoria Aveyard introduced Realmbreaker, the first book in an epic fantasy adventure series. Realmbreaker and its highly anticipated sequel, Bladebreaker, both debuted at number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. Now, readers can enjoy Bladebreaker in paperback. The fight for Allward is far from over. Queen Erida continues her march through Allward, crumbling castles and conquering kingdoms with an unstoppable army. To raise an army of their own, Corain and her companions face perilous lands, dangerous mercenaries, and seething monsters. But will they be strong enough to confront the latest evil that Queen Erida has unlocked? Author Victoria Aveyard.
Bladebreaker has all the twists and turns, magic and action that readers enjoyed from Realmbreaker. This time, the fate of the world is at stake, and Corain must defeat Queen Erida's wicked forces to become the hero she's destined to be.
Bladebreaker is now available in paperback, wherever books are sold.
Recent news reports are raising the alarm about illegal disposable vapes in kid-enticing flavors that are pouring in from China. Here's Fentanyl Fathers co-founder Greg Swan.
I lost my firstborn son, Drew, to an overdose, a tragedy no parent should experience. The FDA has started taking action against illegal disposable vapes that could contain deadly fentanyl. Now, they need to get every one of these out of our communities.
Sponsored by Fentanyl Fathers.
What is dadication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Heart valve disease is more common than you or your doctor may think, especially as you get older. It's serious but treatable with the proper diagnosis. If you or a loved one are experiencing shortness of breath, fatigue, chest tightness or pressure, dizziness or fainting, talk to your doctor and ask for an echocardiogram to get diagnosed early and enjoy your best quality of life. Learn more at askforecho.com. That's ask, the number 4, echo.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Thank you for staying with us through the Silk or Joe Show. We're in the final lap of this hour of the program, and we are joined now by Dr. Richard Kuby. He is CEO and founder of the Prairie Spine and Pain Institute. Dr. Kuby, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Jess.
All right. Happy to have you. Now, this topic, you know, it's been a thorn in my side for 11, 12 years now, ever since a college professor had us read this book about healthcare costs in the healthcare industry in the U.S. But, like, it seems like any fix that the government has done has not actually addressed this problem. You know, like Obamacare, for example, instead of addressing health care costs, all that did was have the government subsidize the insurers. And they wouldn't have to subsidize the amount of money they would have if they had just bothered to address the costs. But now you've been talking about this sort of thing, too. And, you know, like how hospitals are driving out private practices as well. What's going on here?
Well, as you suggest, essentially, the site of service differentials and what that is, I mean, people are shocked to really know that, so if Tomorrow Hospital bought my medical practice and slapped their sign on the door, if all of a sudden, more or less anyway, if I was designated a hospital site, I would be reimbursed, you know, sometimes 60, 80% more than what I am today for doing the exact same thing. And so what it really is a subsidy for the hospitals. And that subsidy has really been used to acquire the private medical practices, namely the primary care doctors. Now, those folks are the gatekeepers. And so once you hold the primary care doctors or the quarterback, so to speak, well, now, you know, if you ever want to get a pass thrown your way, you got to play ball. And so now that's a way to control then the downstream subspecialists and imaging centers and everything else. And so, the hospitals certainly by having the scale and having the imaging centers and other things, they already have a variety of revenue streams that they could implement that make primary care ownership lucrative for them. But when you add to the fact of subsidy, it's almost impossible for a private doc to compete in that manner. And so by nature is going to drive things out. And I think freedom's a good idea. I think centralizing things is generally never a good idea because nobody or no system is wise enough to figure out how to allocate those dollars in all the separate microeconomies that are out there on a lifetime basis. There's just nobody who's capable of doing that, no computer that's capable of doing that. And then when you add the special interest and conflict of interest and bias, you basically get exactly what we've got, which is totally predictable.
And it doesn't seem like anyone's really invested in solving this problem, but also I guess there's not much of a public push because the insurance usually kind of blinds us to what's really going on. You know, you just see that the copay or whatever or deductible that you pay as opposed to what the actual entire bill is. You know, like my favorite example is my grandmother. This was like 10 years ago. She's in the hospital and she talked about how the bill was like $68 for one aspirin pill. Now that's something that, you don't really care about because your insurance is looking at it. But so that's how they keep the costs kind of hidden from the public, the entire like inflation that they do inside the hospital for these things.
Well, a lot of those things are true, and whether it's in the hospital or even just anywhere in practice, it was seen as a benefit to be able to provide these things for patients and make it more affordable by helping cut down co-pays and all these things. But the unforeseen, or maybe foreseen, depending on, you know, what kind of thought process you subscribe to, is that you've taken the consumer out of the equation. You've essentially now handed a bunch of teenagers credit cards and turned them loose in the mall. And so you can't expect to have a small bill when you're doing that. So when the people who are paying the bill aren't accountable for selecting the items that go on the bill, you can't expect the price to be as controlled. And when nobody knows exactly what anything is going to cost, I mean, I got to tell you, it's very hard. If you go somewhere and ask, what's this going to cost? Frankly, most medical places can't tell you what the bill is going to be. Now, thankfully, in many things now, they are required by federal law to be able to give you a good faith estimate. And so they're stuck having to do that. But even though that law has been in effect for a good year, you still encounter people who say, well, we can't give you the price. Like, well, you know, because I've encountered it as a patient. I'm like, well, last I checked, the federal government says you have to provide me a price. So think again and figure it out. And it's usually this incredible act for them to try and figure out what that even is. And so you're never going to control costs if you don't know what those are.
Mm-hmm. And you're never going to be able to hold anyone accountable for it unless there's a means of accountability, which, you know, as you suggested, more decentralization and, you know, less conglomeration, I guess, of these hospital units and less reliability on the government. Because, you know, if they're the only business in town, if they're the only place to go for medical care in town, what are you going to do? You're going to go an hour away to get your foot repaired? Or are you just going to go to the hospital to hand and bite the bullet?
Exactly right. And I think that is the challenge. Not everybody is mobile to be able to go and seek services at different locations with different providers and et cetera. But that really is the challenge. I know in our community in Peoria, most private practices are gone. And as such, we've seen wait lists vastly grow in size. Things that you used to be able to get in for a visit in a couple of days, now it's a few weeks, something several months to get in to see a provider, and which is a term I hate, but is used regularly. So it's forever to get in to see a physician. And you're paying more because, again, you're a captive audience. What else are you going to do? So, and most patients aren't educated as consumers to a point where they can navigate to a... People just have a hard time discerning because... Mm-hmm. You know, they think like most things, well, if it's a more expensive car, it's a better car. Medicine doesn't really necessarily work like that. Just because it's more expensive doesn't mean it's better. And there's no real transparency on the quality either.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Kuby, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show to talk about this. So where can our listeners find out more information about this?
Well, the best place is go to the Free Market Medical Association. If you go to the Free Market Medical Association, it's an organization of folks like myself who are looking to freedom and responsibility, solving our individual problems on an individual basis, and it's very transparent and open. So that is the most information-intense place to go.
All right. Thank you, sir. Dr. Kuby, again, appreciate you being on the show. And listeners, Free Market Medical Association, but our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.